And this chapter is the third chapter of the reading. Hope you guys have enjoyed it so far. This is Doehide and Brown Shoulders, Chapter 11 of Maps of Fate, second book of the Threads West, an American Saga series. Walks with Moon languished in the warmth of the buffalo robes after Eagle Talon had left the teepee. Finally, she stirred, readying herself for a day that promised to be full. The other younger women of the tribe would be meeting down at the water mid-morning when the sun climbed high enough to cast its warmth across the waters. The rendezvous was almost always on the inside curve of a sandbar formed by a bend in the river. The coarse red-gold sand tapered gradually into the streambed before disappearing beneath deeper currents. These shallow edges caught sun in the middle of the short-lived days and were perfect for washing and bathing. Walks with Moon enjoyed listening, though she did not partake, in the gossip thinly disguised as yesterday's news from different lodges, and the arguments over what the decisions of the council would be. Each morning as they talked at the river, the women would discreetly bathe and clean a few items from their teepees, buffalo horn ladles and bowls, or dried roots that would be used for the noonday meal. Inside the lodge, Walks with Moon smiled to herself. No doubt talks with shadows would have some prognostications about what was being decided by the men. She would make these statements with surety in a most convincing, all-knowing tone. Invariably, she would be wrong. The other woman teased Talks with Shadows unmercifully about her incorrect forecasts. She would always shrug off the jest, suggesting, "I would have been right if." Most often, she would launch into a brand new, intricately woven story of yet another vision that had come to her. Ponyhoof would compare the size of her belly with those of every other pregnant woman, a select and revered club to which Walks with Moon now belonged. Ponyhoof, who was but a moon from delivery, had the largest, roundest midriff, which he pointed out whenever the chance arose. Walks with Moon laughed quietly. After the baby comes, Ponyhoof will no longer have the stature of biggest belly. Will she begin to feast and feast, attempting to maintain her elevated status? Walks with Moon lightly placed the palm of her hand just below her belly button. Happiness coursed through her spirit. "You will make your father proud, and I shall love you like no other." She straightened the buffalo robes and stirred the embers of the lodge fire. Adding tiny shavings to the glowing coals, she got down on her hands and knees and blew gently on the remnants of fire until the shavings ignited. She carefully added small twigs, then larger sticks, until the little fire was blazing, and warmth began to push the morning chill from the teepee. With the fire crackling, smokeless, she stood close to the flames, slowly twirling around, letting the heat radiate off her still naked figure. She looked down at herself, ran her fingers over her filling breasts, along her sides, along the flare of her lips, and palms down extended their reach lower, past her groin, and down the insides of her thighs. She closed her eyes, pretending her hands were Eagle Talon's powerful, callous fingers, and giggled. She looked forward to their coming night of tender but intense passion, which they shared often. Their physical attraction had always been special, but it had reached new heights since she had conceived. Perhaps being with child somehow makes things more pleasurable, she wondered to herself as she slipped on her doeskin dress. The soft suede caressed her face and sensitive flesh as it slid over her head and then below her waist and settled on her hips. Its bodice was cut high with buckskin ties that began just above her breasts and rose in a crisscross almost to her throat to keep her warm in the months before and after summer. Its hem came to just above her knees, good for wading and washing, particularly this time of year when the water was still frigid. A single row of carefully polished elk ivory were stitched just under the collar, and the paints and stains she concocted from juniper, alder, black and other berries, and cactus cores added color just below the ivories. She tied the waist with a beaded thong of buffalo hides, its ends split into finely painted leather threads. Only then did she fold down the upper edge of the teepee flap and peek outside. No snow blanketed the ground, and the frost had disappeared other than a few patches where the sun's rays were blocked and the ground was in shadow. No need for moccasins. It's a short way to the river. Walks with Moon ran the shallow-toothed comb Eagle Talon had fashioned for her from the antlers of a mule deer buck through her shoulder-length, shiny black hair. The comb had been a wedding gift from her husband, handed to her with a shy smile. Still humming, she gathered a few items needed at the river, including two metal pots, among her most prized possessions. Eagle Talon had traded for the pots at her insistent urging when Trapper Labonte and his Arapaho woman Lola were in camp prior to the leaves falling from the trees. The pots cost Eagle Talon a good number of beaver and coyote pelts. To this day, he complained that he'd overpaid. "But my husband," she always countered, "the pots were well worth it." Their teasing disagreement became a treasured matter between them and provided ongoing laughs. Remembering, she smiled. Walks with Moon stepped from the teepee. Toward the center of the village, she could see Talks with Shadows and several other women already on their way to the river. They were laughing and bobbing their heads. Anxious to not miss any of the discussions, she set down the pots, fastened the back of the flap to keep in the warmth, and then hurried with eager footsteps to the gathering of friends. It was just after midday when she returned from the river. She had planned to sew and prepare the main meal with the ulterior motive of drawing the buffalo hides around her and her husband early. She was surprised to see Eagle Talon already sitting cross-legged in front of the teepee, his shield leaning several feet from him against the skin walls of the lodge. The shield was decorated, like her dress, with paints from berries and plants. As was the sacred practice, Eagle Talon had fashioned the shield, measuring it slightly wider than his forearm, fingertips to elbow. He had painted the enemy side with two circles of black and white, the top and bottom of each design pointing toward the center and then to the outer edge of the shield. Their white halves directed light and strong energy to the center for protection and surrounded a painted eagle feather with a superimposed image of an Eagle Talon. Though Eagle Talon had protested, Walks with Moon had secretly, at her husband's resigned insistence, painstakingly stitched a quarter-inch thick cross-section of buffalo horn, almost 5 inches in diameter, in the center of the talon. She was careful to work on the shield only inside the teepee, and though Eagle Talon had again protested, she had sewn a second layer of tough buffalo hide behind the first. The shield's center was secured by thick leather strands through a hole she had laboriously fashioned with sharp granite. Tied in a buckskin knot, their ends dangled another 6 inches. Eagle Talon had sized the hand grip in the center of the rear of the shield to fit over his upper arm, affording him added versatility in transport or use. The skins were stretched tightly with thick rawhide where he had tied a single, almost 1-inch diameter alder branch. It had taken him several days to soak and bend the alder until its ends overlapped, forming a circle. The ends were tightly wrapped with triple rawhide bands that he wove through small holes whittled through the wood. Walks with Moon knew it was one of the finest shields in the tribe. Her husband was proud of it and rarely left the teepee without it. "Your gift has added strong medicine," he admitted privately to her, smiling, and she, too, felt a twinge of pride. His unstrung bow rested against the sidewall of the teepee next to the shield, as did the supple leather quiver full of arrows, their fletching of black, white, and mottled gray duck feathers, a lethal bouquet that extended approximately 10 inches from the folded-over, stitched lip of the quiver. Eagle Talon looked somber. The sun was slipping behind the teepee, and his lower body was in shade. He usually teased her with his eyes, but this day his lips were compressed and his features hard. There was not the usual appreciative flow of his gaze up and down her body. She stood in front of him, clutching the two pots that contained the small pile of gourds and wooden stirring spoons she had taken down to the river. He looked up at her, his wide eyes dark and serious, as stoic as the dark marks on the bark of an aspen. He said nothing. They had shared the same fire for more than 2 winters now, and she had learned to allow him his silence, though these moves did not come often. "We had a fine time at the river today. Some sand and current. My pots are shiny and clean." She set them down on the ground. "I think there were twice as many pelts as you traded." This type of gentle prod usually elicited a smile and a good-natured retaliation, but Eagle Talon's face remained stony. She stood quietly, waiting. "Some of our scouts have reported back," Eagle Talon said in a firm, low voice. "There have been several attacks against white wagons. Our scouts are convinced it is the work of renegades, Crow, or perhaps Pawnee." She sat down beside him, folding her legs beneath her, and leaned into his words. "A French trapper they call Pierre, his entire party, and his Blackfoot woman were killed and scalped southeast of the soldiers' fort on the River of the Laramie. The white soldiers are blaming the Sioux. They are using these events as one of the excuses to not honor the treaty the people made with the representative of the white father 5 winters ago. Other scouts have reported two lines of white wagons are headed to where the sun sets south of us. They're still on the lands of the Pawnee. One set of wagons seems to have medicine men who perform strange ceremonies, and it appears it will take the northerly route along the North Big Silver River in the direction of the soldiers' fort along the Laramie. The other is not at the juncture yet where a decision must be made, but the scouts feel they were turned south toward the mountain of the Little Beaver that never reached the top, the mountain the Hairy Faces call Long's Peak. This is the earliest we have seen the white wagons. It is possible they spent the winter at the soldiers' fort they call Kearney, far toward the rising sun. We feel there will be more wagons, more Hairy Faces, more soldiers. He paused and squinted up at her face, which was still bright with the sunlight, and more disregard for the agreements the people made with the White Father. What did the council have to say of this news? There are those you know them. Turtle Walks and Horse's Leg, who wish to paint for war and drive the white man out before they become too strong. There are others who say we must form allegiances and alliances with other tribes, including the Crow. Eagle Talon grimaced, shook his head. Still others, like Sitting Bull and Buffalo Hoof, counsel patience. They believe there is little to fear, a few white men will not make a difference, and in the end, the White Father will honor his word to the people. The council dispersed, making no decisions other than Tracks on Rock has determined we should break camp, move the village, and follow the Tatanka herds to the southeast this year rather than to the east or north. There remains much snow north of here, and the Tatanka are likely to migrate in that direction later than usual. Walks with Moon felt a wave of unease. My father thinks we should move southeast, nearer the white wagon trails? Yes. It was obvious Eagle Talon did not agree. What if we run into white wagons? Walks with Moon hoped she had hid the anxiety from her voice. She wondered what the elder wives were telling their husbands right now. We shall watch and remain invisible. We will go around them, though we will try and learn as much as we can, Eagle Talon smiled for the first time. However, if we run into Crow or Pawnee, we will count coup and take their horses. I could use more horses. Washed with Moon was relieved to see the smile on her husband's face, and she baited him, though she knew what the answer would be. You have 16 horses, husband. You can only ride one at a time. She laughed when his response was as she suspected. A man can never have enough horses. Eagle Talon stood, pulled her up beside him, put his hands on both her arms, and let his look wander slowly and lovingly down the length of her form, as if slipping the leather from her shoulders with his gaze. She giggled up into his face. I shall prepare supper for us. Supper can wait, Eagle Talon said. His eyes were twinkling. He took her hand and turned. With his free hand, he hastily undid the leather ties to the teepee flap. As she bent her knees and reached back for the pot, she saw Flying Arrow standing at the entrance to his lodge, his arms crossed over his chest. He caught her eye, smiled, and nodded his silver-haired head in approval. Inside the lodge, Eagle Talon tossed several sticks on the cold embers, turned to her and took the pots from her hands. He untied the leather strings at the top of her dress where they tightened the soft doe hide around the base of her throat, and then slid the leather from her tanned shoulders, this time with his forefingers rather than his eyes. The supple suede lining of the dress slid down her body and landed in a dark golden heap around her feet. He took a step back and surveyed her, and then nodded almost imperceptibly at the buffalo robes. A minute later, he slipped underneath the heavy pelts with her. Delighted with the strong warmth of her husband's naked body along her length, she sighed softly at the tingle of his lips on her breasts. She moved ever closer in his embrace, one hand now gently stroking his fullness. He throbbed in her fingers, and she could feel the pulsing in her throat grow more rapid. She exhaled slowly from parted lips with steady warm breath in his ear. Her fingers tightened gently around him, and she gasped, her hips involuntarily twitching as his hands slowly smoothed over the shape of their child in her belly, and then found the wet, ready area between her thighs. Eagle Talon slowly rolled her over to her side, facing away from him, held her hips, and pulled her to his. With several gentle thrusts, he embedded himself deeply in her. She felt pleasantly stretched, completely full of the man she loved, and she breathed a groan that mingled with the sounds of the river current kissing the edges of the rocks outside the teepee. Her moans became throaty. Their increasing tempo urged his ever-quickening movements, and he pulled her closer, tighter, molding her to him, one hand splayed out across her trembling belly. She could feel the muscles in his stomach rhythmically tighten each time he pushed his hips forward. Waves of heat floated through her body. The interior of the teepee seemed to float, suspended on the edge of flight, and then she felt herself contract and spasm around him. The sound of her pleasure driving him to thrust hard once more, their being centered in the point of his contact deep within her, and she heard him grunt, felt him explode, and then the sensual sensations of their consummation, their flesh became a shared thing, until she could not tell where her body ended and his began. They lay still, their breathing slowly returning to normal, enjoying the gentle aftershock tremors of their coupling. A great horned owl hooted somewhere downstream. She held her breath, wondering about the meaning of this. An owl's call in the early evening might cause some to feel a tremor of terror. But as she listened to the whisper of river current, she thought to herself the owl's call had seemed gentle, languid, like the river. Perhaps it was not a warning so much as a reminder. But a reminder of what? Had Eagle Talon heard the owl? Eagle Talon raised himself up on one elbow, his chiseled face creased with the smile of a man who has shared with his woman. He began to slip out of her. She made a sound of quiet protest and shifted her hips to capture him for a while longer. She did not think he had heard the owl. She exhaled a deep, contented sigh and stroked his hand where it rested on her belly. "Our people will be safe, won't we?" she whispered. He hesitated, and then his hug tightened. "We will be safe, wife. More men are reasonable than not, and hopefully they all have a woman such as you to talk sense into them when needed." His arms tightened around her again, and she felt the softening still buried in her begin to thicken. Her husband's whisper filtered husky through his lips as he nuzzles her neck. "Perhaps we will wait for supper until morning," walks with Moon.